Okay, so summary from last time. So if you have a coordinate subspace world volume W sub p plus 1 equals V sub p minus R at some position x naught, then to the open strings that look like this, so this is direction 0, 1 up to p, we associated a conformal field theory. I'm changing notation very slightly from what I had last time. It's a better way to say it. We had Fock spaces based on mixed highest weight spaces. And I mentioned that the Chan-Peyton construction generalizes in this way. The global symmetry of this situation is evidently the Poincaré group in 1P and SOD sub T transverse space. And if I put in Chan-Peyton factors, a UN global symmetry. The on-shell state space H sub BB contains, of course, an infinite tower of representations, but the important ones are the induced representation of the vector particle, I'm going to write representations of this group here, the symmetry group, and my convention will be semicolons always can separate different representations for different tensor product, different factors. 1 n squared, the adjoint, that's the vector particle plus the induced representation, the scalar, but the scalar is in a in the vector representation of the global symmetry group, and again it's in the adjoint representation. The fields, the space-time fields on the brain associated with this consist of a connection and scalar fields and then finally in my summary sheet here I should say that at low energies, E times L string, much, much smaller than 1. Remember that string theory has a scale, so I can talk about that. The dynamics of these fields is governed by the Yang-Mills of B sub P theory, which has action 1 over g squared Yang-Mills. Let me emphasize that this is an integral on w sub p plus 1 of the trace of f squared plus the trace of d phi squared plus, now the very important term is this term, phi b squared, plus stringy corrections. We'll say something about the coupling, the Yang-Mills coupling today. Okay. So perhaps there's a larger domain of validity. And finally, finally on the summary board here, I want to mention that the vacuum expectation value of the U1 part of phi sub A was interpreted as a position of d sub p in the transverse space. so with not such good blackboard technique, at least I've summarized what I said last time. Now, because this is a position, we learned that these brains are actually dynamical objects. It's like a piece of saran wrap, and it can wiggle in the ambient space-time. And so we started to discover that there's another space-time interpretation. This is just one space-time interpretation of what is the space-time physics associated to this conformal field theory. And what we were discovering, of course, was the fact that there's a closed string sector. So I drew a picture where the strings go like this, and then they fly off into space. And the conformal field theory description of these closed strings is something I think you all have seen quite a lot. Just the way in open strings we have propagation on a strip. The strip, of course, is conformal to the upper half plane. In closed strings, we have propagation on the complex plane. So the oscillators involve alpha naught mu tau plus two sets of oscillators, alpha n mu z to the minus n plus alpha n tilde mu z bar to the minus n 1 over n. Very roughly speaking. And so you can go through a space-time interpretation of that closed string conformal field theory. Let me zoom through it. A closed is now the integral over all space-time dimensions P of the tensor product of the Fock spaces, tensor ghosts. And as usual, we're well, and then we can form the Virasoro left and right cohomology. And we find unitary representations of the Poincaré group. And the important ones are the mass squared equals zero representations. And those are governed by states that look like epsilon mu nu, alpha minus 1 mu, alpha minus 1 twiddle nu on a ground state, on a highest plate state P. So epsilon is in the cotangent space to space-time tensor 2. And what's the world sheet space-time correspondence here? So it's convenient to separate this space into irreps of the Poincaré group. So if epsilon is in the symmetric power, then the space-time interpretation is that we have a metric. If epsilon is in the anti-symmetric power, then the space-time interpretation is that we have what the physicists call a B field, a two-form on space-time. And the trace of epsilon corresponds to a scalar field in space-time. And that scalar field is called the dilaton. Now, this being Virasoro cohomology, these satisfy various on-shell conditions, and they also have gauge invariances. And the gauge invariance of epsilon of G, of course, is delta psi of G is the Lie derivative of G plus string corrections, where psi is a vector field on space-time. And the reason I'm mentioning this is I want to emphasize something about the gauge invariance of B, which is one form gauge invariance. And finally, phi, at least the leading order in string perturbation theory, is gauge invariant. And that gauge invariant phi has an important meaning. It's the string coupling constant in string perturbation theory. So in the closed string sector, we now have two things. We have a scale and we have a coupling constant. And so when we now take these fields and try and write down a field theory in space-time, we have a double expansion. Am I going too fast or too slow? Okay. Implies we have a double expansion in the space-time Lagrangian. So S is 1 over the string scale, e to the minus 2 phi, times the volume element times the Einstein-Hilbert action, plus d phi squared plus dB wedge star dB. But what I'm stressing right now is that there's lots of other stuff. There's stuff at higher order in the energy times L string expansion. So just to choose one very popular correction term that people are thinking about right now, there's one proportional to zeta of 3. With four, with a certain contraction of four powers of the Riemann curvature tensor. That's an interesting one. That's a tree-level term, but it's higher order in derivatives. Then there are also loop terms. For example, another important term is B wedge trace of R wedge, R wedge, R wedge, R in superstrings. That's the Green-Schwarz anomaly term. And so this is higher order in this coupling expansion. So there are two expansion parameters. And so ignorance space looks a little like this. We have GS. And any physical process is characterized by an energy E. And so the dimensionless parameter to use is E times LS. And when one of these, when you find singularities, it's often associated with the fact that one of these expansions is breaking down. But as Witten said, and this in the context I'm aiming at, in string theory there are no singularities, just surprises. And in the case of the small instantons, which is where I'm headed in these lectures, small-scale instantons, that's really true. So I want to indicate a little bit of the topography here for the mathematicians. So just to get oriented, here is classical Yang-Mills and supergravity. Here is Zeiberg-Witten theory. And somewhere down here is something I'm going to call D-geometry. Now, this is the way Witten presented it when he was recommending small instantons to the mathematical community in a lecture 2 years ago. I think that actually Yang-Mills theory is, classical Yang-Mills theory is pretty non-trivial. So I think it's fairer to use a log-log plot. So you take log of ELS and log of G sub S. And then there are actually two very important lines. This line is where E times the 10-dimensional Planck scale is 1. And then this line is where E times the 11-dimensional Planck scale is 1. 11 dimensions, you say. Well, you've all heard about M theory, and you can use string parameters to write down an 11-dimensional Planck scale. And this is where the energy becomes 1. So what is ignorant space here? Well, so classical Yang-Mills and supergravity, classical GR and Yang-Mills and so on, that's down here. Zeigarnik-Witten theory is moving to the left at finite G string, but low and low, very low energies with respect to the string scale. M theory, or at least 11-dimensional supergravity, is up in this direction. And this region down here is the region of D geometry and small-scale instantons. Okay, so I just thought it would be useful to give a little bit of topography there. Now, that's all I want to say about closed strings. Now, the brain is sitting inside this ambient space with a closed string sector, and closed string space-time physics involves gravity. So we should ask the question, how heavy is a D-brain? Okay? It's the obvious question to ask. So how heavy is a D-brain? Well, remember, a D-brain is an extended object in P spatial dimensions. So we should talk about the energy per spatial volume. And that's something of mass dimensions to the P plus 1, which is called the tension. By definition, that's the tension. Now, in order to say how heavy something is, what do? Well, you weigh it. Okay? And so Polchinski weighed a D-brain 2 years ago. And so I'm going to tell you how he weighed the D-brain. Well, when you weigh something, yeah, experimental physics at the ITP. When you weigh something, what you do is you measure the interaction energy between the mass that you're weighing and the mass of the Earth. Okay? And that's essentially how Polchinski weighed a D-brain. What he did was he put two of them parallel like this. One is the one being weighed, and one is the analog of the Earth, if you like. And he calculated the interaction energy due to the exchange of that tube. Now, there are standard string techniques for writing down that interaction energy. Okay, and so the interaction energy in string theory is delta E, which is the integral from 0 to infinity of dt over t. T is a parameter. T to the minus p plus 1 over 2. E to the minus delta x squared over ls squared times t. So these guys are separated by delta x in the transverse space, times f of t. And you don't need to know much about f of t for what I'm going to say. All you need to know is that f of t, or rather, okay, f of i t, where f of tau is an automorphic form. It's a certain automorphic form calculated from conformal field theory in the standard, using standard techniques of conformal field theory. So there are evidently two regimes of interest. One is where delta x is much, much smaller than L string. Now, in order to understand this, when delta x is much, much smaller than L string, the important part of this integral is the part at t goes to infinity. And what happens is delta e is interpreted in terms of one loop diagrams of the Yang-Mills-Higgs theory on the brain. And that gets us into the regime of D geometry, and I'll come back to that later in a sense. But right now I'm trying to measure the mass of the D brain, and so I should take these things very far apart. That's the other regime. Delta X is much, much greater than LS. And to understand how delta E behaves, you should expand around the other cusp, just as in the way you prove the functional equation for L functions. You use the modular identities. And so you expand around the other cusp at t equals 0, and that gives you an expansion like C sub r e to the minus 2 pi r over t for some discrete set over masses, essentially r. And probably some of you recognize that the integrals that you're doing are representation, are, it's an integral representation of a Bessel function. And probably some of you know that Bessel functions are just Green's functions. And so you have an infinite sum over the Green's functions for exchange of particles in the closed string sector. So that way you can get the interaction energy. So what do you get? So you look at the leading term. Now, Newton's law, you all know, says that the potential due to a mass m at a distance r is minus gm over r. And so how does that generalize? That's for spatial dimensions 3. That generalizes to phi of r equals minus L Planck to the d minus 2 t sub p over r to the d transverse minus 2. That's the denominator there. This is the massless Green's function. This is Newton's. This is the gravitational constant. And this is the mass per unit volume. And so putting these statements together, you discover Polchinski's formula for the mass of the D brain, which is that T sub P is a constant times the string mass to the P plus 1 over the string coupling. Now, what about gravity? What about general relativity? Well, you know that G00 is equal to minus 1 plus the gravitational potential. So what we're saying is that at r very large with respect to the string scale, G00 is 1 minus some constant times G string times L string over r to the dt minus 2 plus higher corrections. And a similar analysis tells me that the dilaton is varying outside the D brain. That's e to the minus 2 phi infinity, constant at infinity, 1 minus constant times g string times L string over r to the d sub t minus 2 plus, and so on. So the D brain, the conclusion is that the D brain is a source of gravitational fields. I hope I haven't completely lost the mathematicians. The D brain is a source of gravitational fields. And I'm coming to my point. In supergravity, by supergravity I mean the analog of general relativity that you get from this action, there are solitons. Okay. This action implies solitons, certain solutions, soliton solutions of the equations of motion, and these and the above are the asymptotics of those solutions. It's an important point. So the interpretation is a DP brain CFT is the microscopic description of the soliton. So you know in Zeiberg-Witten theory you have macroscopic and microscopic descriptions of things. You have, well, let me not go into that, but this is quite analogous to that. Are there any questions? Yeah.
In the supersymmetric case, then there are other natural fields which actually cancel the interaction energy.
Yeah, that's right.
So you can't still.
I'm going to mention that. Well, no, but this is the difference of two terms, and you can analyze the two terms separately.
You
can separately. Yeah, yeah. This is a big leap, conceptual leap for mathematicians. So. You see, something I'm trying to stress things that I think physicists take for granted and mathematicians don't. And something that's clear to most physicists is that a soliton, which is some field configuration phi of x, is just a semi-classical description of a quantum state. And so the existence of these solitons, which we are describing by D brains, implies new sectors and new states. We could call it psi of B in the space-time Hilbert space. So Pierre was asking David yesterday, what do you want to compare? Well, at least you have to compare state spaces before you know. That's where the S matrix is going to act. And what I'm telling you is that in those comparisons of state spaces, you are going to have to include these extra very non-trivial sectors coming from these kinds of D brains. And I'll come back to this point. Okay, before I go on to the... you see, in one sense, now that I've discovered new objects, these D-brains, and since I'm doing quantum field theory in space-time, I should consider Fock spaces of D-brains. I should consider many D-brains together. And I will. But first I should mention one more thing along the lines of the interactions between bulk and D brains. So I argued that there's a quantum field theory on the D-brain, and there's a quantum field theory, there's a sort of general relativity in space-time. And so the question becomes, how are they related? What's the Lagrangian for bulk plus brain? Well, the Lagrangian is L gravity, or supergravity, plus corrections that I just erased. And now the claim is, and this is a claim with, well, which has to be investigated further, the claim is that the brain Lagrangian is actually not just the Yang-Mills theory, but something much weirder. And here I'm doing the U1 case. Something called the Dirac-Born-Infeld Lagrangian. So what's going on here? W is the world volume of the brain, and I've pulled back the scalar field, the metric, and the two-form field onto the brain. F mu nu is the gauge field strength of the brain. Now, it looks probably to you that I lied to you yesterday when I told you that the leading order Lagrangian on the brain was Yang-Mills theory. But I didn't lie, because I said that I said that at low energies, it's described by the Yang-Mills field strength. It's described by standard Yang-Mills theory. And let's recover that. For simplicity, set phi equals a constant and B mu nu equals zero. And expand in L string squared F mu nu. So you expand this, and what do you get? You get the determinant of G mu nu. The first order term vanishes because F mu nu is anti-symmetric and G mu nu is symmetric. And the next term is L string to the fourth over 2 times F mu nu, plus corrections. So there's the Yang-Mills Lagrangian, at least in the U1 case. And what you learn from this, well, let's see that the leading term is in agreement with Polchinski's formula for the mass. This is the area of the world volume. And here you see exactly what I got before. M string is 1 over L string, and I have a 1 over G string, and that's this term here. But now we learn something else. We learn what the Yang-Mills coupling constant is in terms of these fundamental parameters, because that's what stands outside the Yang-Mills Lagrangian. So 1 over G squared Yang-Mills is equal to L sub P to the 3 minus P, sorry, L sub string, to the 3 minus P over G sub string. Notice that the Yang-Mills coupling constant has dimensions of length when the number of spatial dimensions is bigger than 3. That has very important implications in matrix theory, and maybe Robert Dykgraff will be talking about that. Okay, that concludes what I'm going to say about the interactions between the bulk and the brain. I hope I haven't completely mystified everybody. Sorry? Yes.
So, it seems that there is a
Yes, absolutely. That's right. And so what I did was I first looked at the D brain by itself. I looked at low energies and I got a Yang-Mills theory. Plus, as I said, corrections. Then eventually I realized that there is a closed string sector and there's life outside of four dimensions. So then following that logic, one finds gravity, a gravity theory in the ambient space-time. And now we should go back and talk about how the two things are interacting with each other. So first I showed that the brain is actually creating certain static field configurations. And so the brain is a source of this metric in exactly this way. But then when the brain wiggles, it's also going to interact with the photon. It's also going to interact with the gravitons. It's going to radiate gravitons and all of that. And I'm going to have to describe in one Lagrangian the whole system. And so it's going to be a bulk plus a brain term. And the brain term is, the brain is interacting with those space-time fields. So it's going, so that brain Lagrangian is going to involve the pullback of those space-time fields onto the brain in this way. There are arguments for this using T-duality, which you can find in Polchinski's lecture notes. I'm a little confused about what the status is in terms of the corrections. There are derivations of this, but it's not completely clear to me what the region of validity of the derivation is. But certainly, it was derived in the literature. While I'm at it, I should mention that a very interesting feature is the fact that F plus B occurs together, because that implies that there's some interesting extra gauge invariances at play here, because I mentioned before that B has a one-form gauge invariance, and you can argue that the corresponding gauge invariance on the world volume is a shift of A by a one-form, and so the only invariant term is this. So it's actually arguments like that that show you very generally what the structure has to be. The fact that there's an e to the minus phi here has to do with the fact that this is coming from a disk diagram, the leading order of string perturbation theory, and so on. So, in which limit should it be? Yes, absolutely. And so, so in particular, it's in the region where G string is small. Because this is the leading order in string perturbation theory, this is coming from the Euler character of the disk, the power of phi here. So we certainly want G string small. And I would think that there are also higher corrections in energy times string length. Yes, that's my next point. That's a very important point. That's exactly my next topic. Okay. Right, but we don't. Right, but in we don't want this thing to be. So this times L string. Let's see. This is 2, 3. L string to the third should be very small. Yeah. Okay. All right. So now, indeed, I want to come to this topic of the positions of the brains. And this is an introduction to some things that will be very crucial in Robert Dykgraff's talk. I hope I'm not putting words in his mouth, but I can guess that that's almost certainly true. So I've argued that there are these objects, these brains made out of saran wrap flying around, and being objects, you know, just generalizations of particles, we have to consider Fock spaces of them if we're going to do space-time physics. Now, we've talked about one brain. The whole last lecture was on this configuration, D, with 10 Peyton factors, matrix, n by n matrices, and C. But when I discussed quite generally the possibility of Neumann and Dirichlet boundary conditions, of course, I started with this picture, where strings went from here to here. In fact, I even gave the conformal field theory a name, A sub B1, B2. So now what we have to do is we have to find the question now is, what is the space-time interpretation? What is the space-time interpretation of these conformal field theory sectors? Last time I said this is a possible conformal field theory. To simplify my life, I put x1 equals x2 and discovered Yang-Mills theory on the brain for group UN. But now I have to deal with this. And having said all I've said, it's clear that this is in the two-brain sector of the space-time Hilbert space. What we have to do to get some interesting Yang-Mills theory is we need to generalize the Chan-Peyton construction. So before, the Chan-Peyton construction involved taking your clock spaces and simply tensoring by the algebra of n by n matrices. And that was that fit in very naturally with string field theory. What do we do when we want to have two separate brains? Well, there's a very natural construction. You associate with each brain a vector space. And you tensor here with the homomorphisms from V1 to V2. So that's my construction. That's the generalization of the Chan-Peyton construction. So I'll call V sub B, let's call that V sub 1 and V sub B sub 2. I'll call this a Chan-Peyton vector space. So again, something significant has happened in this trivial manipulation. Brains have vector spaces associated with them. And in particular, vector bundles. So that's the Chan-Peyton vector bundle. Now, of course, that's a trivial vector bundle. But having said that, I've opened up a possibility that maybe it's a non-trivial vector bundle. And when we discuss instantons, the way brains see instantons, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to turn this Chan-Peyton vector bundle into a non-trivial bundle on the brain. Moreover, I'm not going to cover it, but when you consider compactifications of string theories, these brains can wrap, like saran wrap, they can wrap non-trivial homology cycles in the Calavi-Yau space. And then you must choose some kind of non-trivial vector bundle on those cycles. I certainly mean vector bundle with connection, because we know we have to specify a gauge field to specify what are the field strengths on the brain. So it's a field, it's a vector bundle with connection. And there are indications, the reason I mention this generalization to Calabi-Yau space is that there are actually indications that the language of coherent sheaves might be helpful in thinking about these wrapped brains on non-trivial Calabi-Yau spaces. But we come back to the very simple situation right here. Okay, so I want to understand, having made this construction, I want to understand what is the space-time physics associated with it. So let's choose B sub 1 and Chan-Payton space Cn1 and B sub 2 and Chan-Payton space Cn2. Thank you. Right. So everything I'm about to say has these Chan-Payton spaces, these coordinate subspaces parallel and of the same dimension. And maybe next time I'll get to different dimensions, but it's important that they're the same dimension. Okay, so to understand the space-time interpretation, we have to look at the spectrum of masses, which is E squared minus P squared, which follows from the Lie algebra cohomology, the BRST cohomology applied to this conformal field theory. And you can grind through all that, but you don't have to. The answer is clear. There's a term for the energy due to stretching a string from one to the other. Now, the energy per unit length is the string, is the is the string tension. And since I've got mass squared, I have this all squared plus the number operator minus 1. So I claim that this is what you get, and moreover, this is obviously what you have to get. Because a string has energy per unit length, and it has to stretch to get from here to here, and the rest is just oscillators. Now, what are the lowest energy states? They're not massless anymore because of this term, but what are the lowest energy non-tachyonic states? Well, those are just alpha minus 1a. The highest weight state space now depends on a choice of two transverse positions. Tensor a Chan-Payton factor. Lambda is in Hom Cn1, Cn2. Just what? That's a number operator. It's a certain operator in the conformal field theory whose spectrum is zero in the natural numbers. So we have this guy, and we have this guy. And the field theory interpretation of these conformal field theory states will have to be something like a connection, A mu of x, with Chan-Payton indices mi, and a collection of scalar fields, phi A of x, with Chan-Payton indices mi. So mi here. M runs from 1 to N2, and I runs from 1 to N1. But now you should ask a question. When I write these space-time fields, I write A of X. Which X? I'm writing field theory on the brain. But which brain? So which brain, which one do I have the quantum field theory on? Well, the answer is, the answer is that the quantum field theory is only an approximation at low energies. So, if the energy is much, much smaller than delta x over L string squared, then this is a bad question. These states are so heavy that there isn't a good quantum field theory interpretation of these states. But if delta x over L string squared, the mass of these states, is much, much smaller than the energy, and this is much, much smaller than a typical string oscillator, then there is a quantum field theory interpretation. And, of course, what you see here is that these fields are just the fields AMI and phi A, phi MI, are the fields needed to fill out the U of N1 plus N2, Yang-Mills multiplet, when delta x goes to 0. Okay? These guys have mass delta x over L string squared. When delta x goes to 0, they become massless. And they become part of the bigger Yang-Mills theory. These are the off-diagonal blocks, AMI, AIM. So let's look then. So that's a big hint. So consider the U of N1 plus N2 theory. It has a Lagrangian, which is the trace of F mu nu squared, plus the trace of D mu phi squared, plus, and this is the trace in N1 plus N2. N1 plus N2. And then the sum over A less than B of the trace of phi A, phi B squared. Again, N1 plus N2. To specify the vacuum of the theory, I have to specify vacuum expectation values of the scalars. Consider the VEVs. Phi sub A equals phi A1 times the N1 by N1 unit matrix, phi A2 times the N2 by N2 unit matrix. I can certainly consider those vacuum expectation values and observe that the trace N1 plus N2 of, okay, that's a VEV, of phi plus VEV squared is the trace in the N1 theory, plus the trace in the N2 theory, plus phi 1 minus phi 2 squared times the sum over I and M of A mu of X I M absolute value squared. I'm working out the Higgs mechanism for you. Plus higher order interactions term. What do you see? You see that the off-diagonal blocks here are getting a mass proportional to the difference of these vacuum expectation values. Just the way those, where are they? These off-diagonal blocks had a mass which was given by delta x over L string squared. And moreover, when the brains come together, there's a symmetry enhancement from UN1 plus N2 to UN1 times UN2 to UN1 plus N2. And so we identify these. We identify phi A1 minus phi A2, this is equal to delta XA over the string scale squared. And we see that separating the, well, what do we see? We learn some very important things from this. We learn, again, that this vacuum expectation values of scalar fields are related to positions of the brain in space-time. And separating the brains is the same as symmetry breaking from UN1 plus N2. It's broken by, if you will, either by phi or delta x, your choice, to UN1 times UN2. So we're identifying moduli space of quantum vacua with positions in space-time. Well, having said that about the two-brain, the 2D-brain Hilbert space, it's clear that there are generalizations. After all, from the point of view of the Yang-Mills-Higgs Lagrangian on the brain, why not consider phi A, which is now made of three blocks? It's clear that we should interpret that as a system of three separated brains. Where we now have CN1, CN2, and CN3, with the sum of the n's being capital N1 plus N2. Okay? Are there any questions? You bet. The bundle is a reducible bundle when you're bringing them together. So the generalization should now be clear. The conformal field theory, A sub BB, is naturally part of a family. Pardon? It's naturally part of a family. I'll call it curly A sub PN, and clearly it's fibered with UN Chan Peyton. It's fibered over the symmetric product of the transverse spaces. So this is, by definition, RDT times RDT divided by the symmetric group. I'm saying this is only part of a family, and I'm about to say in what sense it's part of a family. So bear with me 1 minute. Okay, maybe it'll be clear. And if not, ask me again. Now, this symmetric product, the idea is that this direction is RDT. And so I have to label these brains by the position in the transverse space. Now, this space, Sn of RDT, is a singular space which is stratified by partitions of unity. Partitions of n, excuse me. And we can think of the strata here as the set x1, x1, x2, x2. There are n1 of these, n2 of these, up to xj, xj. Such that xi is another equal to xj, and there are n sub j of these. So these are the open strata in this singular space. And the fiber above this stratum is the conformal field theory A, B sub 1, Cn1, B sub j, Cnj, which is the direct sum of 1 less than or equal to I prime of A sub B, BC, BC. So now, Robert, the answer to your question was that this guy here corresponds to the big diagonal, where all of the x's come together, and all of the Kanpeyton vector spaces come together. So these conformal field theories sit in a family. Now. I want to make one comment about this space. This space, as I said, will be very important in Dijkgraaf's talk. This space can actually be thought of as a moduli space in two ways. So, in general, there's a very beautiful phenomenon that's pervasive in this subject, where there's a phenomenon on the world sheet, and there's a corresponding phenomenon in space-time. And it's a common theme. There's something on the world sheet, and there's a corresponding thing in space-time. So, too, with brains. There's a phenomenon on the brain, and there's a phenomenon in space-time. The space-time version of the phenomenon I'm describing in the supersymmetric case is that DP brains have no force between them. That's astonishing because I just showed you that they're big and heavy. And you know in gravity, big, heavy things attract. But there are also Ramond-Ramond gauge fields which repel. And the cancellation is perfect. So they are eigenstates. These collections of brains are eigenstates of the space-time Hamiltonian, exact eigenstates. We don't know what that Hamiltonian is. Okay. So before I showed you that the brain is actually a soliton and therefore, by semi-classical field theory, corresponds to a state in some mythical space-time quantum theory, which we don't understand very much about. But because we have supersymmetry, we can guess what certain things have to be there. That's the state I mean. So this collection of brains like that is a state an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian when they're all standing still. The world volume interpretation is very pretty. In the super case, the low energy theory is the reduction of 10-dimensional super Yang mills. Just the way so far I've been getting the reduction of higher dimensional Yang mills to get a Yang mills Higgs system, you get the reduction of 10-dimensional super Yang mills. And in fact, the Lagrangian is exactly the same with some fermions added. So you know that super Yang mills has a moduli space of vacua. I'm talking about 16 supercharged Yang mills, like n equals 4 and d equals 4 in four dimensions. It has a moduli space of vacua, and that moduli space is just obtained m of vacua of the super Yang mills is simply equal to the zeros of the potential modulo the gauge symmetry, un. Here's the potential. The phis are Hermitian matrices. Clearly, they can all be simultaneously diagonalized at the zeros of the potential. And the remaining part of the gauge symmetry that I divide out by is the symmetric group. And so this is just equal to Sn of Rd sub t. So the conclusion of this section is that the moduli space of supersymmetric vacua is identified with a collection of points in space-time. And many people feel that's a very deep observation. And moreover, these phis, which are matrices, are some kind of non-commutative version of coordinates on space-time, which at the minimum of the vacua, actually the eigenvalues of phi become the coordinates. But there's some kind of non-commutative generalization of space-time coordinates going on here. And this is part of what's going on in the matrix theory. Oh, my gosh. Oh, no, I can go to 12:30, right?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Okay. So I've made that point, and now I want to do something else. Are there any questions? Yeah.
If you start out like on coincident brains with a bundle that is not reducible, does this always have an interpretation in terms of brains stuck together?
Yeah, they're stuck together, and that's connected to the issue of disentangling a bound state at threshold from the continuum. So I think, I mean, there's a lot that could be done here, but my impression is that if you look at the irreducible connections and you talk about some kind of L2 cohomology on the moduli space of irreducible connections on the brain, then those should be the wave functions associated to the true bound states. And the reducible connections should be associated with sort of products of wave functions from the continuum. Because I guess it's a corollary of what I've said, that the D-brain states that will be associating with this theory, these 16 supercharges theories, these D-brain states are bound states at threshold because there was no force in bringing the brains together. Okay. The last topic I want to do today is T-duality in brains. It was actually, D-brains were first discovered by thinking about puzzles, by Dai Li and Polchitsky, by thinking about puzzles associated with T-duality. So far, space-time has been R1 time S space dimensions. Now I want to consider the possibility that S is of the type R1S times TD, where this TD is a flat torus. In fact, for simplicity, I'll simply take it to be a circle of radius R. Let's first remember about T-duality in the closed string sector. Well, as I just said, in many of the phenomena that we're discussing, there's a world sheet and a space-time interpretation. So the world sheet interpretation is electromagnetic duality. You see, when you have closed strings, you have coordinates x of tau and sigma, which are left movers and right movers. These should be thought of as analogs of potentials in generalized Maxwell theories. I'll say some more about that next time. So as a potential, it has a filled strength, which is dx. And therefore, I can take the dual field strength, so dx is f, and if I take the dual field strength, f dual, that's d of x dual. Star is the Hodge dual with the Minkowski metric. X dual is minus x right of tau minus sigma plus x left of tau plus sigma. What does that mean when I have a periodic boson on radius r? Well, x on radius r has an expansion that looks like n over r times L string squared times tau, square root of 2. Square root of 2 times m times r times sigma plus x oscillator of tau and sigma. Forget about the oscillator. Rewrite this as left movers plus right movers, and you get 1 over the square root of 2, L string squared over R plus MR times tau plus sigma plus 1 over the square root of 2, N L string squared over R minus MR times tau minus sigma plus oscillators. So what does electromagnetic duality do? It takes x right to minus x right, which is the same thing as exchanging r to 1 over r. Exchange n and m. So that's just T-duality of the closed string sector, and everybody knows that. The question now becomes, what happens when you try and do T-duality with a brain around? Well, because our brains are lying along coordinate subspaces, and because I'm going to do T-duality along some coordinate direction, there are two possibilities. The brain is transverse to the compact direction, or the brain is longitudinal to the compact direction. So you'll see it's without loss of generality. So let me choose the case where my P brain is like this, and so it's filling coordinates 0, 1, 2, up to P. And I have a transverse direction, x of p plus 1, which is now compact. So now something interesting happens. So last time we talked about strings that did this. And we got some conformal field theory, a sub bb. But it's clear that you could also consider strings that do this, that wind around. And so A sub BB is graded by a winding number in Z. Corresponding to these winding states. And now we can play the game of looking for the space-time fields associated with these different sectors. Not the brain, the string. The brain is sitting here. It's this big thing. There's a wall, like this blackboard. And there's a compact transverse direction. And so now the strings can wind around. They don't have to come back to the same point. There can be holonomy, so to speak, but they do have to come back to the same point in the p plus 1 direction. So now, as usual, I want to say, what is the space-time interpretation of these sectors? And as usual, I study the mass spectrum. So what is the mass spectrum? Well, again, it's just obvious from the fact that strings have energy per unit length. It's 2 pi r over L string squared w squared plus the number operator minus 1. Because the string has to wind around. So it means that at level n equals 1, we get a massive gauge field, AW of x, and a massive scalar field, a set of scalar fields, phi AW of x, with mass equals 1 over L string squared, 2 pi r absolute w. Now that reminds you, of course, of a Kaluza-Klein reduction. So let's compare the Kaluza-Klein reduction of the Yang-Mills theory on world volume p plus 1 times a circle of radius r prime. Well, we all know Kaluza-Klein theory. We should take our gauge field, A mu, of x and y, and give it a Fourier expansion. E to the 2 pi I w y over r prime, let y be the coordinate in this space. A mu w of x, for mu equals 0 up to p, and we have phi A of x and y equals, same thing, and the gauge group in p plus 2 dimensions, which is the maps from r1p times t1r prime to un, is just the affinization of the gauge group in lower dimensions with no central term. And finally, the mass of these states, AW and phi W, have mass equals W over R prime. Oh, it looks just the same, doesn't it? And it is the same if R prime is equal to L string squared over R. Assertion. This carries over for the interactions. Proof of that assertion, apply the worldsheet electric magnetic duality to these conformal field theories. So the conclusion is that if R is much, well, the conclusion is that space-time with one compact transverse dimension to a p-dimensional brain is equivalent, that the string theory on this, somebody should invent a notation for dealing with brains and spaces, is somehow equivalent, or not somehow, is equivalent, rigorously in conformal field theory, to space-time on R1S times T1R prime with a T plus 1 brain longitudinal to the compact direction. So people use this trick all the time. They're just always going between different dimensions by dualizing on compact transverse dimensions, removing dimensions, restoring dimensions. But there is a caveat here. You can do that thoughtlessly, and some people do. But these are good descriptions in different regimes. So here, this is the appropriate description when R is much bigger than LS. And this is the appropriate description when R is much smaller than LS. Okay, the very last point on this T-duality is that there's a very amusing thing that happens when we consider about, when we consider going back the other way, which has been obscured by my presentation. So let's think again about the Kaluza-Klein reduction from B sub P plus 1 to B sub P along that circle. And now, in the Kaluza-Klein reduction, allow a flat gauge field. So suppose that the path-ordered exponential around T1 sub R prime of, say, A naught P plus 1 of Y dy is conjugate to the exponential of 2 pi I times the diagonal of theta 1 N1, theta 2, N2, and so on. Well, the Kaluza-Klein reduction is again straightforward, but there's a slight difference in reducing the Yang-Mills theory. We now have this term to worry about in the Lagrangian. And you see that that's equal to kinetic terms, but also gives mass terms, proportional to theta I minus theta J squared, A mu of X absolute value squared I J. So a flat gauge field, if you do a Kaluza-Klein reduction on a circle with a flat gauge field around, then you'll find that that flat gauge field has broken the gauge symmetry, un, to un1 times, say, unj. And the off-diagonal gauge fields have gotten mass proportional to theta I minus theta j squared. Well, now let's compare that with this, this d-brain transverse to x sub p plus 1 identified with 2 pi r. Whoops, xp plus 1 plus r. What's the description of that? Well, it's clear that we should have brains at different points along the circle, theta 1, theta 2, theta 3, up to theta k. Because the masses of the off-diagonal gauge bosons because the masses of A mu ij are indeed equal to theta I minus theta j plus, I guess times 1 over the L string, plus the winding number. There was some confusion yesterday about whether there would be winding numbers in the type 1 prime theory. And Eric Yamon said it correctly. There are winding numbers. So that's for the entire Kaluza-Klein tower. And so this mass spectrum is going to correspond identically to this spectrum, and moreover, carrying through the electric magnetic duality on the world sheet, we'll show the equivalence now between the brain in this theory with Wilson line and a collection of brains in this theory separated. And once again, we see, just as before, the identification between a moduli space of vacua, namely the moduli space of flat gauge fields, and a set of positions in space-time. So I'll stop there.